Well, I'm Tom Henry, Thomas William Henry, and Thunder Bay is my hometown, and I flew for Superior Airways for a number of years out of Thunder Bay, Sulico, Pickle Crow, and all up in there, and then I went flying for Great Lakes Forest Products, which I flew for them for 4 years on their executive equipment. Now, living in the north, you get to meet a lot of strange people, okay, and things are different up there. It's not like living in the city here. People in Ontario believe that Northern Ontario is Barrie, and it's not the case, really. But over those years now, as far as occupation, I am a Justice of the Peace. I served in apprenticeship, motor mechanics, and aircraft engineering. Then I went to work on the railroad when I found out aviation wasn't paying me enough. So I went and I trained to become a locomotive engineer on CNR, and I spent 23 years there, and I retired. I took an early pension at age 60, 7 years ago. And one of the stories that I have, or several, involved the flying aspect of things. I was chartered, or my company had a charter for me with two speckled trout fishermen. And I flew them up to Holly Sutton Lake on James Bay. And it's just in off of Hudson Bay, south of Wenatchee. And we closed off the speckled trout season, and I caught a speckled trout 11 pound 8 ounces. I mean, that's not far from the world record. World record's 14 pounds and some ounces. But nevertheless, I then flew them from Sutton River over to Fort Severn. They wanted to go goose hunting, and they had brought their shotguns and all that sort of stuff. They were different kind of people. They didn't really want me around them while I was there. But what am I going to do? Sit in the airplane while they're doing their thing, you know? So I didn't involve myself so much with their fishing. I went fishing on my own with my airplane. And didn't say anything to them. I just went fishing. That's when I caught the big trout. And then I had to hide it in the float of the airplane so they wouldn't find out that I caught a bigger fish than they did, okay? So when we went hunting, we pulled into Severn River and we hired a native person to move the airplane in and out with the tide, okay? It's a big job. You have to watch the airplane because on the river system there, it rises quite a bit. And we get in a Hudson Bay freighter canoe with an Indian guide. Now, a Hudson Bay freighter is 18 feet long, and it's got a wide beam on it, and it's a very stable type of craft. And we're talking September the 15th, we close speckled trout season, arrive, and goose season opens on the 15th. So we left early on the 15th of September, about 1963, I believe it was. I don't have any recollection of the exact date. That is relatively the time frame. So we went up there and got in this canoe way, way, way before daylight, okay? We had hired this fellow with his canoe to take us down to the coast, which was about 6 miles away, and arrived down there at the coast, still in the dark, and get in position with this native guide. And then when the geese come in, they go out at night, and they swim around out in the water out there, and as soon as it's daylight, or just breaking day, they come in to feed on the shoreline. Well, it turns out that we're going down this river, and I was in the bow with my parka on, and all huddled up there looking soft. The two American fellows and the guide were all facing north in this canoe, and they were toward the stern of the canoe. And I was watching a star, which I thought was Venus, a bright star in the south, southeast, where we were going. We were going straight north. And as I was watching this thing, kind of huddled down there, trying to keep warm and shaking around, all of a sudden that star went from due south to straight north across the western sky in a split second. I mean, it had to cover 150 miles. We're at sea level, okay? And no trees. We're above the tree line. So here is this star, as fast as I could turn my head to follow it, and then it stopped instantly in the north, just like it had in the south. So I said to the native fellow, I said, "Macha, macha," an Indian, "pull a canoe over to the shore." And he didn't know what was going on, neither did the other fellow. So pulled a canoe over and get out of the canoe, and I said, "You see that star up there?" I said, "I know you're not going to believe me, but in this, a few seconds ago, or a few minutes ago now, it was due south." And I said, in a split second, no trail behind it, no nothing. No increase in speed. It was from stopped to whoosh, and stopped as instantly as it started. So they, after explaining this to them, we stood there looking at it. Of course, we want to go hunting. They want to go hunting. After about 3 or 4 or 5 minutes of looking at this stupid star, the guy said to the Indian, he said, well, we better go now. And I said, well, just give it a second here. Now, just about the time that they were cheesed off and want to go about their business, this star went halfway to where I saw it originally, which was due west now, stopped dead instantly and went straight up and disappeared. Just quick as that. No, like, rounded this way, it was a whoosh, and gone. Now, weather balloon? But don't hand me that crap. I know better, okay? I'm a pilot, not smart, but I know what airplanes do. It sure as hell wasn't a helicopter. What is there in our time frame of that year? What did we have that could cover that space in that space of time? Then to come back, falling stars don't fly up, they come down. So again, what was it? And now these fellows all saw it, so did the native guy. On leaving, after we went hunting and finished, I flew them back to Thunder Bay. They took my name and address, and they were going to go home and contact somebody to tell them the story. And then they were going to give them my address so they could confirm what had happened. Well, I never heard nothing. Now, I failed to get their name and address. Now, at the time, I could have got it from the company, but it was years later, and the president of the company died, and everybody moved away, and that's the end of the story. It was no big deal. But I went on. I saw several things when I was flying, okay, that were really interesting. They could have been lenticular clouds, which are shaped like a saucer. It could have been the sun in the proper disk. These were things that I have no idea what they could be, and they could have been explained by some expert who wanted to shoot down that I'd seen something other than that. But I went to work. I was flying in Nikina, and I was doing engineering on company airplanes, and I was flying all the company airplanes. Went up for a coffee break one day, and the conductor that was on the railway pulled out his check stub at coffee break. And I said, do they pay you every 3 months or what? He said, that's 10 days' wages. I said, you paid more income tax in 10 days than I earned in a month. He said, well, you're in the stupid flying game. He said, you should have been on the railroad 25 years ago. I said, yeah, I guess so. I said, are they hiring? He said, yeah. They want guys to go to Gimli, Manitoba to go to school and become locomotive engineers. I said, can you get me a job? He said, with your background, I get you a job tomorrow. I said, do it. I'm going to quit this. And 3 days later, I was on a train going to Toronto for my medical, and I went on the railway. Well, you have to start off as a brake person, brakeman, then to a conductor, and then to, after you've got your conductor's ticket, you can go to Gimli, Manitoba to become an engineer. But you had to put in that 2 years ahead of that, taking that course, which I did. I lived on a street that ran north and south. The railway station is straight south. My house is straight north, and it's on what was called Main Street. And then there's streets further east and west running in the same direction. I got called to go to work at 4 o'clock in the morning, thereabouts. It could have been 2:30, I don't really know, but it was 45 or 50 below zero. And every step you take on the snow, your foot goes crunch, 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 okay? I left my house, called to go to work, and I walked out my front yard and start walking down that main street going south. My house now is half a block behind me, and I got my lantern for as a brakeman carries, and my pack sack on my back with my groceries in it to spend the day in Armstrong, Ontario, on this train, waiting for a train to come back the other way. And as I was walking down that main street heading toward the railway station, which is not that far, quarter of a mile to the station, okay, I could see the station visibly. There's a whole row of houses, some of them two-story houses, on my left. And I mean, I'm walking on the road, and no, the houses are no further off the road. In fact, they're even closer to the road than what my house is here. Okay. And all in the background, over my park hood up, I heard whoosh, and I turned my head to listen. What the hell was that? Then I heard whoosh, and here come an object. Approximately, it could be smaller. It could have been a little larger. But I would have, at the time, I thought it resembled the size of a half-ton truck, okay? It was more round than it was saucer-shaped. It was a bright color, favoring orange. No lights flashing off of it, no sparks behind it, nothing. Just here it is. Now this thing is heading for a house. And it goes, whoosh, and it lifted up and went, going to hit the next house. It was doing this, okay? And the thing isn't moving at 20 miles an hour. I mean, even less. I watched it completely in amazement as it went by, less than 75 feet from me, doing this up-down thing, and disappeared over the horizon, doing the same thing as it went right over top of the railway station. Oh, what the heck is this thing? Wow, what did I see? And I didn't see any windows in this thing. I didn't see anything other than it was an orange-colored, rounder than oblong. It was sort of rounded, but, I mean, they pointed, but not much. It was more of a ball. And so when I got to work, I know better than to open my mouth about these stupid UFOs because somebody think you're crazy. So when I got to work, I said, anybody see any strange lights around here? Any strange noises? Nope. Didn't see nothing. I said, oh, okay. I dropped the subject instantly, got on my train, went to Armstrong, came back. The next day, there's a story circulating in the town of Nakina that a local person, now I'm not going to call him a drunk, I'm not going to say he's heavy into drugs, but he has very little moral standards, okay, let's put it that way. He might have been called by other people, I have to be careful what I say about people, and I didn't say this. He was the village idiot, okay? He was the village drunk and the village drug addict, according to other people. Now, whether that's true, I have no idea. If it crossed my desk, I would have had to deal with it. It never did, so I never had to deal with it. I have no evidence that isn't true. And I don't want to discredit the person. But anyhow, he had spread a story that he saw a flying saucer, same time as I was called to go to work, okay? It jived. And he said, he was on the next street over, okay? Now there's houses and a sort of a back lane area and another row of houses on the next street facing the other way. So he is actually further away than I was. And he was looking west and I was looking east. That's how it was. I was going south and looking east. And he said that he saw a flying saucer with little people looking out the window at him, little green people looking out the window at him. Now, if you think I was going to corroborate his story, no way. I never said a word. Now, his name was Danny Redgrift, and I don't know where he is to this day. I don't know whether he still works at a railroad or whether he got fired. I have no idea. He wasn't very dependable. Okay. But that was the story of this. Now, where did that thing go? Did it crash just beyond the railway station? I have no idea. I didn't have access to an airplane at the time, and I didn't want to discuss this with anybody, so I just forgot about it. And I never went looking over there. It's all clear-cut timber area. It had been cut off, and that was where this thing was heading, due south it was going. So, talking to one of my buddies there, Bob McKay was his name, and Don Hughes is a pilot. He lives over here in Cape Real now. And he and my buddy went flying very shortly after this happened, okay? And I taught this one fellow how to fly, Bob McKay. I flew his airplane many, many times. And they went out flying one morning, early in the morning, and there's a lake called, I'm going to forget the name of the blinking lake. I should know. I took off a million times. It's Cordingley Lake is the name of it. It's about 5 miles north of the town in Nakina. And so it'd be about 5 miles from where I saw this thing. And they discovered, as they flew out, they found a hole in the ice that was perfectly round. I mean, like a ball, round. But it was the size of about 3 football fields. You know, perfectly round. Like you took and drilled a hole there. And the ice was, as I recall them telling me, was kind of pushed up over this hole, and the water was muddy where this had happened. It's 40 below zero, okay? Now, lakes don't stay open very long. So I talked to a friend of mine, Ray Oja. He wrote his thesis for his doctorate in geology on meteorites. And I asked him about it. I said, would a meteorite make a round hole in the ice? And she said, no. He said, if a meteorite hit Cordingley Lake, it would have blew everybody in their, out of their beds in the town of Nakina, because anything within 5 miles around, the impact would have been tremendous. And he said, to start off with, meteorites don't come straight down. They come in on an angle. So it would have hit and tore up things and left a trail before it actually sunk. I said, well, how about a piece falling off an airplane or something? He said, stop and think about it, Tom. He said, you're flying along and something falls off your airplane. Do you think it goes straight down? It doesn't. You're moving along at 150 miles an hour. That thing is going forward as well as down. So he said, if I told you what I thought it was, you'd laugh at me. I said, no, I wouldn't. What do you think it was? He said, well, don't laugh at me. I'd say it was a UFO. He said, I would say that they were taking water samples. They were taking ice samples. I don't know what they were doing. Or one crashed there. I don't know. But he said, you'd be wise to take a boat one day and some diving gear, and it's on the northwest side of Cordingley Lake, the far end. So I said, well, that sounds interesting. But I didn't have access to scuba gear or anything, so I never ever did that. Whether there's something under there to this day, I have no idea. But am I going to tell somebody the story of mine? No. You know, really. I want to remain, anonymous. I don't want, you know, everybody that's involved in UFOs is crazy. They're either drunks or something, okay? But my wife and I went to Thunder Bay. We had a daughter that could eat an apple through a picket fence. She had an orthodontic problem real bad. Her teeth stuck straight out. We were getting her teeth fixed in Thunder Bay. We had to go down there every weekend because Saturday, this orthodontist, dentist, did school children on Saturday because that's the day they're on school. So we went down there and had these things adjusted. We were going there for 4 years. And it wasn't too much longer after what I had just seen, and Dawn and Bob telling me the story about opening the ice. Wife and I are coming home, and it's about 4 o'clock in the morning. We've been taking the kids horseback riding and skiing and things they can't do in the bush, okay? And had supper, and then they're sleeping in the back. And my wife and I are driving down the highway coming back to, I have to go to work the next day in Nakina. And it was a kind of an overcast night. It wasn't snowing. Again, it's real, real cold. And the pipeline runs alongside of Highway 11 around the Beardmore area, Jellicoe area, in that area. And we were between Jellicoe and Beardmore, I would guess, is where we were at the time. And all of a sudden, both of us saw it lit up the sky. To our right, on the pipeline, is a bright orange object, perfectly round, not oblong or anything else, perfectly round. And it don't matter. What happens is this object seemed to come out of the cloud, out of the overcast a little bit, okay? And it was on the pipeline. We knew where the pipeline was. It was right alongside the highway, not very far away. And this thing, if I was to relate what it looked like the ball came down and back up, and it looked like a pipe. You know the old pipes that people used to have with that hook in it there? Well, this is what it looked like if I'd have put the imprint of what we saw. There was the trail down, the loop up, and back into the atmosphere again, back into the overcast, and disappear. Well, it would have been, at the distance we were away, it would have had to be an object bigger than my house, because it was that big, okay? And my wife and I both said, what in the dickens was that? And you know, time it was a helicopter again, at 2 o'clock in the morning, or whatever time it was. So, the wife and I, again, didn't say anything. The thing is that there's several other things that I saw. I was in Toronto one day, and I pulled into an Eaton store in downtown Toronto. Well, actually, east of Toronto, more around by the airport there. And I looked up in the sky, and here is a brilliant aluminum-colored object, which could have been an airplane, it could have been anything, at the time that I first saw it. But it was stationary. I thought, God, maybe they got the bats balloon or something around here, you know? And I watched it for about, I don't know, three, four, maybe 5 minutes. It was kind of cool. I wasn't wanting to stand out there too bloody long. But you know that there was airplanes flying. And the airplanes didn't seem to see this thing, or nobody was making any. I never read anything in the news. I never heard anything in the papers or nothing after this happened. But all of a sudden, that thing that was sitting still went gone, disappeared, climbed up and just disappeared right outside the Toronto airport. How come they didn't pick it up on radar if it was something strange? How come it wasn't in the news? I don't know. I have no idea. I thought maybe I was cracking up or something. But I did watch it for quite a while. But it was brilliant aluminum, brilliant stainless steel, bright shiny object, sun shining on it. And it was obvious that it wasn't moving. I mean, if it had been moving, it would have been moving across the sky. This thing wasn't. So I've been very fortunate to have had those experiences in seeing things. And I don't know how to describe them. What did I see? UFO? To me it was a UFO. What was the UFO? I mean, that's a name given to an object that's unidentified. I can't identify any one of them. The most interesting one was the one where I was walking down the street in that cold weather. I had a real good look at it. Now, a meteorite would have sparks flying behind it, would be going like a son of a gun. I mean, it would be swooshing, and wherever it landed would be a big boom and sparks flying everywhere. That wasn't the case. And as far as this guy seeing the windows, maybe windows were on the other side. I don't know that. I never could. But on my side, there was nothing. Just the color of the vehicle making that. And the noise was enough at that time, sincerely, to, I would have thought it would have woke people up because it was that loud. I mean, that all whoosh, and that was when it went up. And then when it leveled off, that noise was gone until it went back down again on the next house. And there's a row of houses, one after the other. And that thing was going to crash into each one of them houses had it not done that whoosh thing going over to Calgary. What the hell did I see? It was crazy. My chum in Thunder Bay, and I truly have forgotten the most of this because I didn't believe we had saw a UFO at the time. At least I didn't. I thought about it afterwards. Now, Russ McKay is his name. He lives on Elizabeth Street in Thunder Bay. He owned the Tim Hortons stores in Thunder Bay, and he has since retired out of that, and he drives a truck for Tim Hortons, delivering donuts to the different stores in there. And he has a better memory of it than I do. And we were flying. I was flying the airplane. Well, he was a pilot too, but in this particular case, I was flying the airplane. We were coming into land at Thunder Bay Airport, and we both saw an object at the time that I have forgotten about. I haven't forgotten that it happened. I've just forgotten the details of it. At the time, I wasn't that particularly interested in it. Then when he was trying to convince me that what we had seen was a UFO, we got a hold of the control tower. They had nothing. There was no airplanes in the area. He did check that out. There was nothing flying there, just us. So what the hell was it? I don't know. But it was between us and the runway. And it was not an optical illusion. It was not reflections. It was something for sure. But he would probably talk to you. And again, his name is Russ McKay. It's M-A-C-K-A-Y. And Mac K, okay. And he lives on Elizabeth Street, Thunder Bay. And he's home every evening. So if you ever phone him and tell him that I was talking to you about it, he may just tell you the story of it. He may recollect it a hell of a lot better than I did. We're going back, that time frame would be in 1960, 61. So, I'm sure if he did remember it, he's told me, how come you don't remember that? And I said, I'm sorry, Russ. And he said, you don't want to talk about it, that's why. I said, it's not that I don't want to talk about it. The recollection of it has left me. And I apologize for that. And that's the end of it. That's what all I got to say, really. I'm interested in finding out what these things are. I'm the kind of a person that I would just love one would pick me up and take me up there and do whatever. I really would. I just love it. I raced stock cars for 7 years, 1953 to 60. I raced motorcycles. I raced snowmobiles. I've led a crazy, stupid, bloody life, okay? I lived, as my chum in Thunder Bay would tell you if you're talking to me, I lived on the cutting edge. And I've got hurt in plane crashes and all kinds of stupid things over the years. I'm lucky to be alive. So, but I have no reason to have told you anything that is not completely true, okay? And that's the best way that I can explain everything. I can't add to it or subtract from it. It's just basically the way it works. And I do have a pretty good memory. I've got a lot of things that I should be writing a book about, with some of the things that happened, bushland and things like that. But I'm getting too old for that stuff, I guess. Writing books, I'm not much on writing. I wish you luck with yours. It's too bad we can't get the government to be more honest with us. I still believe they're a bunch of liars. I believe that politicians are akin to a diaper. They should be changed regularly for the same reason. I believe they get full of shit after a while. That's the truth. I got to be careful what I say too. But I have had some bad experiences with politicians. I don't like them anymore. I used to fly them around when they were running for election, like trying to get elected, and I flew them all through the North, and Hudson Bay, James Bay, and all up in that native communities trying to get the vote swayed. You know? And when I heard them talking, I thought to myself, good God, where are you people coming from? And as soon as they get elected, they forgot everything they ever promised you. Isn't that the truth? Crazy. Well, anyhow, go ahead, shut her down.